Illinois faces some big challenges. Today, you're about to hear a truly honest analysis of the problems we face. Equally important, you'll also hear an in-depth discussion of some practical solutions. This is your radio source for stories, the insight, and the answers you won't hear anywhere else. Not on the media, and not coming from Springfield. You're listening to Illinois Rising, presented by the Illinois Opportunity Project. Now, here's your host, AM 560's Dan Proft.
Welcome to another edition of Illinois Rising. I'm Pat Hughes of the Illinois Opportunity Project, filling in for Dan Proft, who's taking this Sunday afternoon off. Well-deserved. He's been working really hard. And joining me in his stead is the producer of Illinois Rising, Joe Kaiser. Joe, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Pat.
We love when we have Joe as our co-host. He does a phenomenal job producing the show. He's always responsible for all the great segments, the great guests that we have, including some great guests we have again today. So it's great to have Joe on as a host. And Joe, big news across the state this week is the Rahner-Ives matchup. And specifically, you know, last week, John Cass of Chicago Tribune wrote a piece that said that Ives crushed Rahner at the Trib debate, so she got tremendous momentum. Then she cut this ostensibly controversial ad that's being, you know, hailed by the left and by left-wing Republicans as being racist and bigoted and homophobic, which of course it isn't. And so there's been a lot of, you know, a cacophony of pain and hues and cries from the left on that. And then on top of that, in that same time frame, Jeannie raised $2.5 million. Dick Uihlein, conservative businessman out of Lake Forest, Illinois, who is a supporter of these types of causes. He gave her a lot of money that she can use to run ads. So it was a big week. What I think is it's an earth-shattering week. It's changed the nature of this race. It's changed the nature of the state of Illinois and the politics. And joining us to discuss this, I'm grateful that he's here, is Rich Morthland. Rich is a former state representative from the Quad City area, and he is Jeannie Ives' running mate. He's running for lieutenant governor on the Ives-Morthland ticket. Rich, thanks so much for being on the show this morning.
Well, Pat, thank you so much for having me on again. I'd love to talk with you guys. Really appreciate all the work you're doing at the Illinois Opportunity Project. Of course, listen to the show regularly. But wow, you're absolutely right. Thank you for characterizing this week and what happened very accurately. And it has been another big, big week for the Ives ticket.
So are you feeling inside the campaign? And when you go out, and I know how you are, you're a hard worker, you go out and you talk to the voters. Are you feeling momentum from the positive ad that was run on during the Super Bowl, from sort of the satirical ad that's just pointing out the flaws of Bruce Rahner's left-wing policy agenda, and of course from, you know, we have to reach voters, people have to reach voters, the campaign has to reach voters, you need money to do that, big money coming in this last week. Take us through how you feel about the momentum of the campaign and specifically why.
Well, great question. Absolutely. The momentum of the campaign was just absolutely catapulted. Obviously, we knew that advertisement, although accurate, was going to be a magnet for attention. And it is actually catapulted this campaign into a national level name recognition, which was the big deficit we had prior to that. And, you know, these are serious times and this is a serious issue. And so we had a serious advertisement that actually, while somewhat polarizing, and I don't mind that, I don't mind pushing away people who aren't going to vote for us anyway, it actually really solidified our contact with the base. And, you know, I was tuning in yesterday, I was tuning in recently to AM 560, and I heard a new radio ad with Jeannie saying, now that I have your attention, and it all followed after that, that she was, and so the advertisement definitely did what it was intended to do. And yes, it was a bit of a lightning rod, but that's okay. We're going to move through that and beyond that and be able to now, from a greater position of prominence, be able to talk about the serious policy issues that separate the Ives-Morthland ticket from the incumbent.
Rich, your ads are obviously all over the place and people are talking about them, but I think one of the biggest signs that your campaign is building momentum is now that Rahner has his own ad going against your campaign, calling Jeannie, Mike Madigan's favorite Republican, saying that she's taken money from Madigan cronies. This is a big departure from where he was just a few weeks ago, calling Ives a fringe candidate, refusing to really acknowledge your campaign against him. What do you think about the response from the Rauner camp, and what do you think about their attempt to defend their record, if there really is any attempt at all?
Well, their record is indefensible. And one thing I frequently say when I'm out and about is that in 14, the incumbent ran a good race, and he ran a good race on some good principled policies. And sadly, of course, he hasn't followed that out, especially in the economic areas. We can talk about social issues all day long, too. But in the economic areas, he has not governed the way he promised. And so Representative Ives and I intend to go to Springfield and keep his promises for him, for the betterment of the state of Illinois. But we are definitely, we have catapulted into a place of national prominence. We are changing the discussion, and it is really exciting right now, because when I'm out talking to people, they're fed up. They know what's going on. They've been listening, and they're saying it's about time someone is ready to speak the truth, because you're going to have to be able to speak the truth if you are then going to turn around and govern and enact the truth, which is exactly what Representative Ives and I intend to do.
Hey, Rich, in the post 9/11 days, when Rudy Giuliani was running for president, the attack on him from both his Republican primary opponents and from the left was that every sentence that came out of his mouth was a noun, a verb, and 9/11. And the attack that I think is prominent for Bruce Rauner is that Dan likes to say he only knows 70 words. And by the way, making a lot of money doesn't make you a good communicator or a good governor or a good politician. In fact, in this case, it's the opposite. It's a noun and a verb and Mike Madigan. And you, I know, because you lived the Springfield life, you were in the state house as a conservative Republican legislator doing a great job down there, and you followed Jeannie Ives' legislative career. Tell the listeners about the gap between Bruce Rauner's accusation that Jeannie Ives is somehow affiliated in any way, shape, or form with Mike Madigan or Mike Madigan's policies, and true that up with what the actual truth of her legislative career and how often she has stood directly up to Mike Madigan.
Absolutely. Jeannie Ives is a real hero in Springfield. She has stood against the Madigan machine. She has stood against the system. She has worked to bring change in Springfield, and she has been very effective and efficient. She does not kowtow to the speaker. That advertisement could not be farther from the truth. Jeannie Ives is a great conservative leader, and she has demonstrated that in Springfield. They taught her how to do that at West Point, and she has continued to live it out. And in her three terms as a state representative, she has been anything but Mike Madigan's best friend. Anything but. That is so outrageously untrue. It is. But it just shows the desperation of the incumbent. Yeah, I was at an event with him not long ago where I spoke before he did, and I didn't even know he was in the room. But when he got up and gave his speech, it was the same speech he had given 4 years ago. And then he says, basically, but this time I'm going to get it done. Well, really? Come on. This cat is not going to change its spots. He is obviously not the kind of person he sold us to be in 2014. Now it's time to have the courage and the fortitude and the commitment to doing the right thing and change the direction of Springfield. That starts at the top. It starts with Jeannie Ives.
He is Rich Morthland. He's a former representative from the Quad City areas. He's a friend of the program. He's also running as Jeannie Ives' running mate for Lieutenant Governor. Rich, we wish you all the luck in the next 45 days or so. And we thank you for coming on the program.
Gentlemen, again, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate everything you do.
So, Joe, obviously Rich has pointed out sort of, what Rauner's failings are. I think one of the greatest failings is in this ad that you were so sharp to mention that he's running. First of all, he's running that ad because she has he realizes that it's going to be 100% name ID in a Republican primary. They're all going to know her. They're all going to know him. And now he's got to attack her. But the Madigan line, I've seen Jeannie Ives stand up on the floor of the House and rail on Mike Madigan. The idea that she's in his pocket is absurd. Now, she'll cooperate to get things done with legislators, as she should, but that's absurd. And it just goes back to this other thing about Bruce Rauner, the lies, the false promises, the not keeping your promises. Like Jeannie likes to say on the campaign trail all the time regarding HB 40, the public funding of abortion, who lies to a cardinal? Who lies to a cardinal? And I think that's what Bruce Rauner is. He's someone who is willing to say or do anything to hold on to his office. What do you say?
I think it's really telling when a candidate's running for office and their rebuttal to defend their record is that weak, when they say something like comparing Jeannie to Mike Madigan, or you see this in the Jim Durkin Mickey Strawberries calling Madigan Mickey, which is just a ridiculous claim. When you have nothing else to defend your record on, it's very telling to voters, and it says a lot about your record that, you know, you have nothing to say about your accomplishments. Instead, you're making up some kind of claim, trying to tie your opponent, a very weak argument. It says a lot about the candidate running in that race.
Well, we're going to find out here, Joe, in the next 45 days or so, or whatever the number is, whether or not it's going to work. I don't think it's going to. And Joe, I had, in my private life, I spend a lot of time, you know, recruiting and training candidates for public office, and specifically for the state legislature. And I had the pleasure of meeting our next guest, Chris Miller, when I went down to do some recruiting in the Charleston area in the eastern Illinois, because Reggie Phillips, who's someone that we had supported, you know, my groups and others had supported previously, the former state representative, was retiring. And we needed to find somebody who we thought would be a good fill-in. And in full disclosure, I'm supporting Chris, and he's a great candidate. And we just wanted to have him on the program and learn a little bit about how the campaign is going. So joining us from the Charleston area is Chris Miller. Chris, thanks for joining the program.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
How you're running currently a contested primary. And tell me, you know, how the campaign is going, and, you know, who your main opponents are, and what you guys are trying to do and what you're trying to accomplish.
Well, we have an opponent that was actually recruited by the Democrats, and, you know, I would be the only candidate that's going to be on the ticket this year that's actually a Republican platform candidate. Our campaign is going very well, and we're just trying to go to events. We're going door to door. We're meeting people and shaking as many hands as possible, and just trying to introduce ourselves and let people know what we're about, and let them know that we're the only true conservative that's on the ballot this go around.
So what are you, when you're going out, you know, obviously you've been a farmer in this area for a long time, so you understand the folks down there, and you've interacted with everyone in your prior life before. When you go to the doors and you talk to voters, what are you telling them about their property taxes, about their pension costs, about the structural financial problems that are going on in Illinois and how we can solve them?
Well, one of the, you know, my district is about 100 miles long and about 60 miles wide. And what we've been trying to do mainly is to ask people, you know, what their main concerns are. And I know that, you know, I guess that one thing that I say to them, I said, if I can go to Springfield and wave my magic wand, what are three things that you would like for me to do? And consistently up and down the district and back and forth, the number one thing has been to fire Mike Madigan, you know, and which is interesting. And of course, I can't wave my magic wand and do that. The voters are going to have to change 9 seats in the House and go through the process. But anyway, that's the number one request. Real estate tax, income tax, you know, workman's comp, term limits are the, you know, the consistent messages that I knocked on doors and talked to people.
And firing Mike Madigan would be a big change to the culture in Springfield. And you had an interesting post on your Facebook page recently that I really liked, that state government, this is in light of the sexual harassment allegations against State Senator Ira Silverstein. You said that state government isn't set up to serve ordinary people. It is set up to enrich and protect the powerful. Now, Dan and Pat talk often about how it's important to get a new crop of people in Springfield with a better set of ethics. What is your assessment of the culture like in Springfield from your perspective as an outsider? And how would you, adjust to that, but how would you approach going to Springfield, given that culture, given the set of ethics that they seem to abide by?
Well, I think that, you know, when I go to Springfield, I don't plan to change the principles that I've lived by you know, my whole life. And so when I'm going, when I go to get to Springfield, I'm just going to be who I am. I've been a man of principle, a man of character, man that, you know, that's always tried to do the right thing the right way. And I don't see that changing. I know that, you know, the opinion, and I guess that I would have to share this, is that, you know, that that state government has become the enemy of the people, because they continually are wanting more and more and more of the dollars that we work hard to make. And what we want to spend our, the money we make, you know, on our families, on our homes, on, you know, the things that we enjoy doing. And there's just less and less and less all the time. There seems to be no fiscal restraint.
So, Chris, you know, so we've obviously met, and I've met your wife, who's, you know, fiery and a terrific lady, and believes all the same things that you do, and is, I think, one of the big assets, I'm sure you'll say, to your life, but certainly to this campaign. You've got this wonderful wife. You've got a bunch of kids. You've got grandkids all across the age spectrum. And, you know, you could have said, okay, I'm going to farm and I'm going to hang out with my family and enjoy the blessings that the Lord has given me. What is it specifically that would motivate you, after accomplishing so much in your life, to say, now I'm going to go and fight this fight in Springfield? What was the motivating factor for that?
Well, the motivating factor is that, you know, that we're working on four generations living in East Central Illinois, and we would like to stay here. But I know that one of my daughters and her husband have already left, and we have another daughter and son-in-law that's contemplating leaving. And a lot of it has to do with just the cost of living here in Illinois, between the income tax hike and the real estate tax. I mean, successful people have options, okay? And if they can, I mean, my oldest daughter and her husband are considering, they need to, they have six children, they need to build a new house. And of course they had to, and the foresight to go talk to the county collector to see what their taxes are going to be if they give him the plans for the house and say, how much is this going to cost me? Well, in Coles County, it was going to cost someplace between $10,000 and $15,000 a year just for the real estate taxes and everything. And, you know, I could live in Indiana, I could live in Kentucky, I could live in Tennessee, because they do their work over the internet, and so they aren't tied to the state of Illinois. They would like to be here because their family's here. But, you know, sometimes it comes down to dollars and cents, and you have to make decisions based on what's going to be best for your family in the long run.
Chris, so you've been on the campaign trail a while now, and the primary is just about a month or so away. What is the main message? I know you said firing Mike Madigan, but in your district, in your area in particular, in terms of different policies, what are the things that your constituents are worried about most, whether it's property taxes, out migration, the income tax hike last year? What is the number one thing that you think people are worried about?
Well, I think that from a business standpoint, you know, the statistics that I've seen, we've had 700,000 people leave since 2005, you know, which is the highest in the nation, you know, and it seems to me like that we're in the top five in almost all the wrong categories, with income tax, real estate tax, corporate tax, workman's comp, and so on and so forth. And the people, you know, I'm a big advocate of capping real estate taxes 1% of fair market value. And just because people are so tired of having the equivalent of a second mortgage on their house that never gets paid for. And not only is it crippling, and people are leaving. And also we have to consider the missed opportunities that we have in business, because we need to grow our business climate here too. But I mean, just in January, we lost a Toyota Mazda plant that would have meant 4,000 jobs and $1.6 billion of the economy, and et cetera, et cetera. And it just, you know, if we're going to make small changes, you have to change the way you do things. If we're going to make big changes, we have to change the way we think. And get over this idea that we're going to penalize achievement. And anytime anybody has some success, it's like, oh, you know, we get a have another creative way to extract tax dollars from successful people that have achieved great things. And that whole mindset just has to change.
He is Chris Miller. He is running in the Republican primary in the 110th district. This is one of the races where the primary is the general. So if Chris is successful, he's going to be the next representative to replace Reggie Phillips down in the Charleston area, which is where Eastern Illinois University is. Chris, good luck in the rest of your campaign, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Joe, so really quickly, we got about 30 seconds. You know, when Chris mentions that this Toyota Mazda plant is going away, right, it's going somewhere else. It's going to, you know, Georgia. It's going to Tuscaloosa. It's going to Tennessee. I don't know specifically where this one's going to. But I traveled in Georgia, and I traveled in Alabama with my daughter doing college visits, and we'll get to that segment later. And you can see the growth. You can see the paved roads. You can see the new buildings. You can see different policies having a different impact. And Chris Miller, I think, is fighting for those policies here in Illinois. And Joe, let me tell you who had a bad week. You think anyone at home thinks that they had a bad week? Let me tell you who had a worse week politically. And that is big old J.B. Pritzker. This week, it was revealed, you know, J.B. used to talk to the governor back when the governor was Rod Blagojevich, who's serving like another 10 years in federal prison for trying to sell the Senate seat and other misdeeds. And they have this guy on tape saying some incredible stuff. And let me just play you a clip right now to give you a flavor of exactly what we're talking about.
I got a great idea for you, though.
Okay.
I'm sure you thought of this one, but Jesse White. Even though I know you guys aren't like, you know, bosom buddies or anything, it covers you on the African-American thing.
Correct.
He's totally, you know, he's Senate material in a way that Emil Jones isn't, if I may say.
Okay.
I mean, you know, he's just, I don't know how to say it exactly, but Emil's a little more crass.
Right.
And it opens up the Secretary of State spot, which is the key spot,
right?
You know, controls jobs, et cetera. And it'd be a lot less pressure on you. You don't have to put an African-American in that spot.
Correct.
Joe, I have been doing politics and following politics for a long time. If a Republican office holder of any consequence or of no consequence, or the spouse of a Republican office holder, or the brother-in-law of a Republican office holder, or, you know, someone who met a Republican office holder at a gas station said this, the Republican office holder's career would be over. It would be over. They would excoriate them. What do you say about the specifics of what, take us through what this guy just said?
Well, there's a couple layers to this. We'll break it down. First, he's saying appointing Jesse White to the Senate seat being vacated by Barack Obama would cover Rob Blagojevich on the African-American thing, the thing that is trying to appease a group of voters. So he's talking about a racial demographic as political pawns. So right there, that's racially insensitive, borderline racist. He should be getting pounded by that. And some people are calling him out for it, not enough. But then the second thing is, he's saying it opens up the Secretary of State job for somebody to appoint to have all the patronage jobs go along with it. And a lot of people don't, casual voters might not know about the patronage system, but this has been something that's going on for over 100 years in Illinois. It's just the epitome of what's wrong with politics in the state. And J.B. Pritzker is just going along with it, saying, hey, this is the reality. You can have the patronage jobs from the Secretary of State office. He probably is aware of them, that the speaker doles out to representatives. He looks like both an insider from this clip, because he's been talking to the Governor Blagojevich on several different tapes. From these tapes, he looks like an insider, which he is. And then two, on this one, a kind of racially insensitive, kind of racist in the way he views an entire demographic of voters, that these are the pawns that I can use for political gain.
Yeah, I totally agree. Look, when he says, he's basically saying, hey, of all the black people in the world, this is like that movie Get Out. Have you seen that movie? Right. Mm-hmm. You know, where white people, white liberals are going around, you know, talking about the athletic ability of African-Americans and all this other nonsense. If you haven't seen that movie, you should, because this is exactly what it's talking about. It's talking about liberal white people who claimed to be, you know, on the side of African Americans, were at the same, while they're really, what they're doing is they're using, they see these people as one giant block vote, right? Which is disgusting and insensitive and terrible. And that's what JB's doing. He's actually ranking which African American office holder is acceptable to be in the Senate. And he says that Emil Jones struggles to find a word. And he says crass. God knows what he really wanted to say, right? And he says Emil Jones is too crass. And then I think the kicker from a race perspective is this. Let's send Jesse White, who ironically ended up becoming the Secretary of State, which is the irony of this, right? Let's send Jesse White to the Senate, okay, with 100 people, and he'll vote our way. But let's make sure we get the right guy who's going to hand out all the patronage jobs, who's going to run the division that really matters to greasing the skids in politics, like you just said. And that guy, we're going to have that guy be white. That's exactly. That's really what's being said here. In the job we think's really important, let's put a white guy in there. And in the job that we don't really care about, let's put the most acceptable, using his terms, African-American in there. And that is what is unbelievably racist in this commentary. Unbelievably disgusting. It makes me sick. It makes you sick. But we're conservative Republicans. Aren't we supposed to be the ones who are racist and homophobic and transphobic and this phobic and that phobic? And J.B. Pritzker is a charlatan. This proves that he's got some racial animus towards African-Americans. And propping up an African-American woman as his running mate isn't going to save him in this instance. What do you think?
And then he uses that gesture. So the gesture, let's say they did appoint Jesse White to the Senate seat in a different world. That gesture would have been used by Blagojevich on the campaign trail to say, you know, to appeal to black voters. Like you said, with his running mate, Juliana Stratton, maybe he thinks that's the gesture that appeals to that community. But in reality, whether you're black, white, Hispanic, whatever, the things that people should be voting on, the things that should be important in this campaign, are expanding opportunity in the state. That's what should appeal to black voters, to Hispanic voters, to white voters, is how is the state going to change its jobs climate, change its business climate, to improve lives of people going forward. That's how you appeal to the black community, how you appeal to the Hispanic community, to voters all across the state. Those are the things that really matter, not the gesture of, hey, I'm going to appoint somebody of this racial demographic to this office or this office. Those are just empty platitudes. It's just placating to a base. And I think it's being exposed right now by some of the reaction. I mean, you have some African-American politicians, Tony Preckwinkle, Christian Mitchell, obviously Juliana Stratton, who are defending him for political purposes. But other people are starting to notice, and I think voters are starting to notice all across the spectrum of who J.B. Pritzker might really be.
Joe, following up from our last segment on the sinking ship that is J.B. Pritzker, you are in your hands have the most recent poll out this week in the Democrat primary for governor. And what does that poll indicate?
Yeah, this came out Thursday morning from the group Victory Research. And we've talked a little bit about polls in the past few weeks, which seem to be tightening all around. It's Pritzker at 27%, Biss at 23.5%. So he's only 3.5 points behind. And then Chris Kendi at 17.3%. So he's still in striking distance. But the number that's most startling in the context of all this is that 27% of Democrat voters are still undecided.
Yeah.
And you see that Pritzker number going down and that Biss number going up.
So there's a wide path for either Kennedy, because Kennedy's at, what, 17.5 or something like that? There's a path for Kennedy. There's a path for Biss, and JB is sinking, because at one point, even recently in the last week or two, he was up by 13 or 14 points. Now that's shrunk down to 2. My guess is if you took that poll next week, it's going to shrink even more as clips like the clip that we just played for J.B. Pritzker talking to Rod Blagojevich on this, you know, his racial animus towards people. And of course, you know, Governor Rauner is running ads, or the Republican Party's running ads, saying that he's, you know, basically, you know, who can raise me money? I can give J.B. the Senate seat. He wants the Senate seat. You've got J.B. on tape basically asking for a public position. And so because of that, he is sinking. And it tells you a couple of things. And obviously, the Trump election was the real lesson on this. People have got to stop making predictions. This whole punditry stuff is nonsense, right? You don't know what's out there about somebody. J.B. Pritzker got all of the endorsements of the Democrat Party, all of them, right? He got the support of all the big players. Tammy Duckworth, Dick Durbin are doing ads for him. You mentioned Preckwinkle, right? And so why? Why? He's worth $2 billion. They want some of that money, right? But now, because they had no idea this stuff was out there, and now he's sinking, right? And the question is, how long did they stay with him? And the second thing is, Money can't buy you love. Money cannot buy you love. You could run ad upon ad upon ad. As long as the voters know who you are and they're starting to know who J.B. Pritzker is, you are in big, big trouble.
That's right. And then those people you mentioned, Dick Durbin, Tony Preckwinkle, these are people who have been around forever, who are kind of rent seekers, who are probably attracted to J.B. Pritzker's money and assume that he was a shoo-in. And it's starting to turn out that that's not the case. And I think bringing up the presidential election is a good point. Predicting these things is never, I think, the prediction, that kind of, that tactic that people have of the 538 of trying to predict the outcome of an election is starting to prove a little weak, just because you don't also know what's in voters' mind. I think a lot of people who are in these polls who are asked of how they feel, you're ignoring a lot of people. You're ignoring, especially on the right now in the Rauner-Ives race, there are probably a lot of people, even if Rauner's up 30 points in whatever poll they want to put out, there are a lot of people that aren't included in that poll, a lot of people that have been ignored either by the Rauner administration or just by the political climate in general the last couple decades. And those are people that are going to go out and vote. There's social conservatives, fiscal conservatives that are looking for an alternative to Rauner. And now there are people on the Democrat side that are looking for an alternative to Biss. Looking out for an alternative to Pritzker, and it looks like Biss, somebody running to his left. I think this is one's getting really hard to predict, and anything could really happen.
I don't think there's any question. I mean, you look at the Republican side, and you see, like we talked about with Rich Morthland earlier in the program, you see Jeannie Ives with all this money all of a sudden. She's raising more money from other sources as well. There was a town hall article this week about her. So the race is starting to nationalize. It had already nationalized by National Review calling Bruce Rauner the worst governor, Republican governor in the country. And you know, she's got this money. She's up on TV. She's done the Super Bowl ad. The issues are in her favor because Bruce Rauner's agenda has been on economic issues. It's a failed agenda from a conservative or Republican perspective. The one big legislative achievement that he claims is the school funding bill, which was really just a $300 million bailout for Chicago public schools. The only good thing out of it was the $75 million in tax credit scholarships for people to go to private schools, although that ostensibly helps and was supported by the Cardinal. The one good thing you did, you're lying to the Cardinal on HB 40, on sanctuary states, you've done the wrong thing. So Ives has the issues. Now she's got the money. She's got the wherewithal. She's a policy expert. The Tribune said that. And she she's a West Point person. She's former Army, her husband's Army. She's got two kids in the Army. One is like a trying to be a Navy pilot, and the other one's a Ranger. I mean, this is a woman who's led an incredible American life, who understands the issues. And when the voters know this, Joe, when they know it, it's going to be very, very interesting. And we might have a situation. I'm not predicting this yet because I don't want to be the pundit that I criticize. We might have a situation that no one would have thought of even 2 weeks ago. Ives, Biss. Think about that. Ives, Biss.
And Biss is largely unelectable in certain parts of and a lot of the state, in part because, I mean, a lot of people are leaving the state, one, but then there are almost half the residents that are still here want to leave if they had the means. And the number one reason that they cite is taxes. And Daniel Biss has been not shy about saying that he wants to change the tax structure to raise income taxes on most Illinoisans here.
Yeah, he's
a progressive tax.
He's Illinois' Bernie Sanders. Right. Remember how close Bernie Sanders came to beating Hillary Clinton in the Illinois Republican presidential primary? He's the Bernie Sanders lane and the Bernie Sanders candidate. So he is going to appeal, which he's doing right now, by the way, to this swath of Democrat voters who are in that left lane, which is in the multiple person primary with Kennedy, with Pritzker, probably splitting some of that other vote. He's got a lane, but in the general, he's got problems. And it's so ironic to me that all the people on the left are saying you can't nominate Ives because she's unelectable. The reality of it is she is so much more electable to the middle because of economic issues than Dan Biss is to the middle. And in an Ives-Biss matchup, Ives has the advantage. Joe, moving on from politics onto policy. So, as you know, you're a recent college grad, Marquette University, where I also went, great university. And that's obviously a private school. They have their own tuition and scholarship structure and everything else. But what I want to talk about today is sort of the public schools and namely Illinois' state universities and how hard it is to afford them compared to other state universities. So I've got as listeners know, and you know, I've got a daughter who's a senior, and she's applied to and visited both public and private universities outside of Illinois. And, you know, when you go to these other universities like North Carolina or Georgia or Alabama, like in-state people pay almost nothing. It's like 10 grand. And they make it really hard. For example, North Carolina makes it really hard for someone from out of state to even get in. And if they get in, you've got to be really, really smart. Your scores have to be terrific. And then they charge you an arm and a leg to go there. And then sort of the out-of-state subsidizes the in-state. Michigan is like this, right? And so you can go to a good state university for a reasonable amount of money, $10,000, $12,000 a year. In Illinois, doesn't work that way.
Now, University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign has the highest tuition of public schools for undergrads in the country. And Northern Illinois University, Illinois State University, UIC, SIU, these are all schools within the top 10 in the country, according to data from Higher Education Tribune that came out this week. And even like a school like Chicago State, which is struggling financially, is pretty expensive relative to the rest of the country. And what people need to know about this, it's not just high tuition because they're putting out a great product. I mean, other public schools throughout the country are doing the same thing. The reason the tuition is so high is administrative bloat, high pension costs, and this has just risen over time. And Illinois is having a really hard time retaining college students, keeping high school grads in state to go to college because it's so expensive. And then once they leave to go out of state for school, you know where the jobs are in those states and the other states to go to. If you go to IU in Indiana, there's a good chance you're going to get a job in Indiana and Wisconsin. There's a good chance you're going to get a job in Wisconsin. And that's a real problem for the state moving forward.
No question. So when I was in high school, and this is, you know, you're going back 30 years into the late 1980s, and you know, I went to Marquette, but you know, going to the University of Illinois, getting into their business school, getting into one of their engineering programs, that was the golden ticket because you could go, for example, I had a buddy who was an aerospace engineer. You could go down to Illinois and have MIT quality education and sort of reputation in the engineering department, but only pay $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 a year. Those days are over, right? So now, as a father of three kids, one who's leaving the state to go to college, regardless of where she goes, there's no advantage to it, right? It costs me just as much to send her to U of I as it does to these other schools. The other schools are going to give her a scholarship opportunity. She can go out and see the rest of the world as opposed to Central Illinois. Her opportunity to get jobs in different parts of the country opens up. And so many parents, and I know because I've got a bunch of them that are friends of mine, are making the decision to leave the state, not go to U of I or Northern or any of these other schools, and go to the neighboring schools, so many more, Iowa, Indiana, Michigan State, Michigan, Purdue, and then like my daughter, places like Georgia and Alabama and Michigan. So this can't persist, but it will persist because what our administrators care about, what our politicians care about is the high cost of pensions, making sure public sector union employees, and including people in the university system, are paid and represented, driving tuition costs up, not financing public education from the state like we should. So all the burden goes to the person who has to pay the tuition, the children, and the parents of the children.
And when these students go across the country and leave Illinois and maybe don't come back, that separates families. Now you have your kids in a different state, and it's just it's a sad thing, and it's one of the most important things that the state needs to get together is solving this out-migration crisis. I think people tend to think people leaving Illinois are older or seniors retiring, but millennials were actually the largest group to flee the state from 2011 to 2014 with a net loss of 81,000 of them. So that's people 18 to 34. That's a huge problem because that puts the future of the state in jeopardy when no one's coming. I mean, you see these downstate communities that can't attract or retain young people. It's starting to become the whole state where the future is leaving for better opportunity.
The future is leaving for better opportunity. You heard it here first.